Okay, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This is William Baker on behalf of the petitioner, Soraida. I should say that I spoke with her last night, and because of some logistical problems with my office, she's not able to attend the hearing today, but of course she's obviously concerned about this important life-changing case in her life, and she's very concerned about what's going to happen. So this case depends upon whether the court should have granted her asylum, withholding, or convention against torture case. The court did make a mistake in that there was no substantial evidence to support the denial of her asylum claims. In this case, she was targeted because of her race, and she was persecuted
Wait just a minute. Perhaps I misunderstand the facts, but my understanding is that she's an indigenous woman, but the person who attempted to rape her is also an indigenous person.
Sure.
There was no actual rape. There was an attempted rape, which is horrific. I grant you that. But do you have any case law that suggests that attempted rape is torture for purposes of the asylum statute or withholding?
I'm not, as I sit here, aware of any particular case, Your Honor, but the attempted rape combined with the repeated death threats and essentially more attempted rapes on threat of death would constitute persecution and would constitute, in my opinion, torture. But I think the government opposition seems to dwell upon the fact that the villain here, the rapist guy and murderer threatener, didn't specify why he was targeting his victim, the poor Soraida.
Well, he certainly didn't do it because she was an indigenous woman. He was an indigenous man, right?
No, I think it's quite obvious he did it because she was an indigenous woman, in that he knew that he could do what he wants and get away with it. He did not
get away with it. She then went to, I assume, where she could have reported to the police. She called her husband in the United States, who told her to leave, right?
Yes, the husband seemed to blame her as well,
But the reality is, when this atrocity occurred, which fortunately was not consummated, she didn't just sit around. She went to the phone, walked to wherever it was, talked to her husband. He said, leave. She left.
Yes, but that didn't stop we'll call him the attempted rapist, from preying upon this poor woman. And again, I contend again that he did that specifically because he knows that he can do this with impunity, even though he's indigenous as well. There's no police there. She said there were like two incidents of police contact in 26 years, which is incredible. She said the indigenous people are worth nothing or words to those effect. And again, the villain, the predator, the rapist, the torturer, the murderer, they're not going to articulate their motivation for their deprivations. They're not going to say, I'm doing this because you're an indigenous person.
Let me ask you this. When she went to the place she called her husband, that's the same place where the police were located, right?
I believe so.
And did she contact the police? Did she say anything to them while she was there?
I don't believe the record indicates that she did.
So you have the burden to show, first of all, I don't know if you have a particular social group, but let's say arguably that you do. Your client has the burden to show that the attempted rape occurred expressly because of her particular social group, and that the government either was condoned or acquiesced in this. She did not contact the police, even though she was in the place where they were located. So what does she rely upon? The country report? Is that her evidence?
Well, the country reports, her testimony that essentially, again, indigenous people are nothing. They're worthless. The government doesn't care about them. There's some other articles there about how indigenous people are discriminated against in Guatemala. And apparently she did not go to the police. for those very same reasons. She knows it's useless. They're not going to help her. They're not going to go over to the village. And we get back to our villain, the attempted rapist, and I think he knows that. Again, there's 400 years of oppression against these.
This is all supposition, though, is it not? As you know, counsel, I'm sure you have a lot of expertise in immigration. We get hundreds of these cases from Mexico where people claim that various and sundry things happen, and the statement is, well, we don't go to the police because the police are corrupt. Unless there's specific evidence that shows their inattention, we don't credit those. We just don't credit them. What's the difference here?
Well, the difference is this is an indigenous woman living in a remote indigenous village. I think she said 3 hours from the police station, where the police have been there twice in 26 years. Okay, and the judge did.
She went to the place where they were, and she spoke to her husband. All she would have had to do is to go to the police and tell her what happened. Now, if they don't do anything after that, then she's got something else. But she didn't even make a report.
That's correct. But again, she knows it's futile to make the report.
That's her statement. But she bears the burden of proof, does she not?
Yes, she does. And my contention is she met her burden of proof, given all these extraordinary facts, and the fact the judge found her credible, and that's also supported by the country report showing the discrimination and poor treatment of indigenous people.
Did the judge find IJ find her credible with respect to the attempted rape, or what she said about what the police would or would not do?
I'm not sure he broke it down. He said he found her generally credible. So I think her testimony, which is evidence, and that's the only evidence we have before the court on that issue, was that, I mean, the police don't care about indigenous people. And then that's apparently why the rapist was able to do this with seeming impunity, because he knows that as well. It's a known fact. They're not going to help.
You got 46 seconds left to get to the 2 minutes. You're going to save any of your time?
I'll go ahead and stop here and turn to my the amicus counsel.
Okay. So this is Mr. Price, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and my video is still off. I requested the AV operator to turn it on, but it's still off. So,
oh, there you are.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. I would like to proffer a different reading of the record with respect to the existence of the police. There are no police in that village. The record shows at AR-000148 that the police are a two-hour walk away.
No, I don't think anybody said they were in the village. What I asked about was she walked to call her husband. And the place where she called her husband is the place where the police are, right?
I believe that is correct.
Okay, so that's the problem.
Okay. I then, in that regard, I would echo what Mr. Baker said about the police. And I wanted to point out in my argument that she did suffer past persecution, and I cited a couple.
In what way? I asked your opposing counsel whether there are any cases that say that attempted rape in the fashion we're talking about here constitutes torture under either CAT or withholding or asylum.
And yes,
give me any.
I cited them in the reply brief. They are a case where Your Honor wrote a concurring opinion, that is Duran Rodriguez v. Barr, 918 F3rd 1025. And there's another case, Perez v. Lynch, 674 F Appendix 627 628-29 2017.
That said that an attempted rape is torture?
It says that attempted rape accompanied by death threats in the circumstances that we have here is past persecution. So that's what I was going to argue. I would like to reserve the rest of the time, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you and Mr. Baker got between you about 40 seconds. So you'll proceed when the other side's finished then. Okay, let's hear then from Ms. Beard for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court, Sarah Bird on behalf of the respondent. The court should deny the petition for review because the record doesn't compel the conclusion that petitioner met her burden of showing that the harm she experienced was on account of or motivated by a protected ground, her indigenous ethnicity, or her particular social group, which kind of coincides with the racial component, it's indigenous women. One of the elements for an asylum or withholding claim is this nexus, this motive element. And she has to show by either direct or circumstantial evidence that there is such a motive. And here she testified that she did not know why her mother's ex-boyfriend, I'll call him Garcia, his last name, she testified she did not know why Garcia targeted her. And she also, there's no evidence that he made any comments whatsoever about her indigenous ethnicity. He himself was indigenous. He never mentioned her being indigenous. And this court has held in other contexts that comments, racial slurs, could be direct evidence of motive. But here we don't have that direct evidence. There's also no circumstantial evidence of him targeting her being motivated by her indigenous ethnicity, because everyone in their village was indigenous. So that doesn't explain why he singled her out, because that didn't make her different from everyone else. It was reasonable then for the agency to infer that he was motivated by his desire to commit the crime, which is awful. The immigration judge called it a sick desire. But in this circumstance with opportunistic crime, it's a reasonable inference that the motive is to commit the crime. And since there's no direct or circumstantial evidence to compel the conclusion that her status as an indigenous woman is what motivated him, this court should affirm the decision. Judge Smith, you were asking about whether the harm rose to the level of past persecution or torture, and I think that I would argue that that is not exactly on point in this case, because that's a separate element. So perhaps an attempted rape, amicus pointed to this case that he had cited in his brief, Duran Rodriguez, and perhaps death threats and an attempted rape in other circumstances could rise to the level of persecution. Here, the agency didn't even decide that issue. That's a separate element. The agency decided that she didn't show it was motivated by a protected ground. So in addition to showing harm that rises to the level of persecution, she also has to show that element of the motive. And that's where her claim didn't meet her burden of proof. And that's the basis on which the agency denied asylum and withholding of removal. And then for the cat protection, the agency denied that on the basis of her not showing that she would be tortured with government acquiescence, which she didn't show. There's no government involvement whatsoever, and she didn't even report this to the police.
Counsel, I want to ask you about that aspect of it. They seem to rely on the country report, a failure, as they feel, of the BIA to speak about the country report. Clearly, they did refer to that in connection with the asylum review. Is there any requirement that the BIA expressly refer to the country report in more than one of the contexts that it examines in connection with the case?
No, there's no requirement. I mean, certainly the BIA should be reviewing all of the evidence in the record, and there is a presumption that they do that. But there's no requirement that they mention that in every, as they go through each and every part of their decision.
Where is the case that says, or where is the regulation that says there's a presumption that they review all of the evidence if, for example, they've reviewed it in one of the other contexts, say asylum? Is there a presumption that if the BIA examines the country report in connection with asylum, that it has also reviewed the country report with respect to the CAT claim?
So with regard to the case, I don't know that off the top of my head, and I don't have it in front of me. I can get that to you if you would like. Please let me know. I believe that it's sort of case law just saying that unless there's something that the board just clearly missed, we assume, we give them the benefit of the doubt as a government actor that they reviewed the whole record. And
that's what the case says that you're talking about, right?
If I'm remembering correctly, yes, Your
Honor. Why don't you send us a 28-J letter and, of course, to opposing counsel with that case or cases?
Okay. But in this case, I think that here the government's position as to the CAT claim is that the board based that primarily, and the immigration judge based that primarily on her not showing the government acquiescence piece. And having not reported the incident to the police or sought police protection whatsoever, the country report shows some good and some bad with regard to the Guatemalan government's efforts to protect indigenous people. Certainly there's the long history of marginalization and discrimination. However, there's also some evidence that the government is trying to remedy that, trying to better protect their citizens, including the indigenous people. I believe I cited in my brief one part of the country report that they've located several police academies in predominantly indigenous communities in hopes of training up more indigenous individuals as police officers. So there have been some efforts on the part of the government, and there's certainly no evidence that she's shown that the government would be willfully blind to this particular individual targeting her, nor that the government would actually participate in any way in her torture.
What is the law with respect to the specificity that is required in connection with the CAT claim to the degree you're relying on a country report? She did not report the incident to the police. So we're looking at more general matters. The country report says what it says, but of course it says nothing about her, says nothing about her village, says nothing about her particular area, to the best of my recollection.
That's right.
Is that sufficient to meet the requirement of government complicity or acquiescence under CAT?
No, we would argue that under the circumstances you just described, the general country report is not enough, just showing that that the government does not always catch every criminal, or that there's, you know, potentially funding issues or other problems that the government is facing isn't enough to show meet her burden. So she would need something showing that she individually faces this particularized likelihood of torture for CAT, and this court has required that particularized showing, and she simply didn't make that. The agency also made this internal relocation finding, which would undermine her CAT claim. Although they made it in the context of asylum and withholding, it does also undermine the CAT claim, because she didn't show that she would be unable to just avoid him by relocating. He never pursued her outside of this village. She testified he doesn't have a car. As you mentioned, she walked 2 hours to leave Sonoma or the nearest place with the telephone and the police, and he didn't follow her. There's no evidence that he has the motive or inclination to pursue her. It seems like every time he ran into her, he threatened her, but he wasn't pursuing her outside of her village. So that's another basis for the denial.
Questions by my colleague?
I have
one more question. We have some case law that suggests that if the BIA doesn't look at the country report at all, and I'm not sure that's what we have here, that theoretically it should be remanded, but we also have the concept of harmless error. What's the government's position with respect to harmless error in the event that we conclude that the government should have, I mean, that the BIA should have said more about the country report?
Well, in that event, we would argue that this would be harmless error because, as I mentioned just a second ago, she didn't point to anything specific in the country report that could meet her burden of proof. So for asylum and withholding of removal, it was denied based on the lack of motive of the persecutor. And that's just simply not covered in the country report. There's nothing about her or her persecutor. And then for Convention Against Torture, it's too general. It doesn't show that she individually faces that particularized risk of, or likelihood. It has to be a likelihood of being tortured with government acquiescence. It's kind of a mixed bag of good and bad.
Okay. So thank you, counsel. So now, Mr. Baker and Mr. Price, how are you going to use your last few seconds?
Well, I would just say, Your Honor, again, the attempted rape more than once, the various death threats of these up to 15 does constitute past persecution. And the poor indigenous woman is the one central reason why he was preying upon her. Again,
because she was indigenous and he was indigenous.
Yes, in that they're held in essentially in contempt. They're of no value to the government. They're not going to be protected. And that is her testimony on a micro level. And then the country reports on a macro level says the same thing, essentially, how they're discriminated against. And you need to, it's a cumulative effect of the evidence. You have to take into consideration her testimony about her particular village and also compare that to the country conditions. I'm not sure the BIA did that. But again, the predator's not going to specify, articulate the reasons why he's preying upon someone. That's not how evil works. He just does it because he knows he can get away with it. And that's, I think, the crux of the claim here.
And where is testimony in the record that he did it because he knew he could get away with it?
Her testimony about the police not being there, how indigenous people are of value.
I understand that, but where did she say he did this because I was an indigenous woman and he knew he could get away with it?
No.
She didn't say that, did she?
No, she's just a poor woman doing her best, testifying in court. She doesn't know about these things. She just knows she was preyed upon. She knows she's in danger. She knows this guy's going to kill her if they go back, and that's why she's begging the court for some protection.
Okay.
But she doesn't know about asylum and CAT and withholding. She never heard of those things.
Okay. Counsel, your time is up. Let me ask my colleague, does either have additional questions for the petitioner or his counsel or her counsel? Very well. Thanks to all counsel in this case. The case just argued, Alonso versus Barr, is submitted.
All right. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.